Welcome to the Confluence Cast presented by Columbus Underground. We are a weekly Columbus-centric podcast focusing on the civics, lifestyle, entertainment, and people of our city. I'm your host, Tim Fulton. This week, the city's transit system is going through a transformation. At least that's the intention. On the occasion of an impending transfer of power and a sales tax issue on the ballot this fall to bulk up services, Columbus Underground reporter Brent Warren sat down with both the outgoing and incoming CEOs of the Central Ohio Transit Authority, or COTA, to discuss the shift in leadership, the transportation project set to be on the ballot this fall, and what's next for the former Greyhound station in downtown. You can get more information on what we discussed today in the show notes for this episode at theconfluencecast.com. Enjoy the interview.
I'm here with Joanna Pinkerton, President and CEO of the Central Ohio Transit Authority, and Monica Tejas Fowler, Deputy CEO. But those titles are about to change very quickly, very soon. And that's kind of where I wanted to start today, if you guys don't mind. Joanna, can you tell us a little bit about what's happened in the last month and what you plan for your future?
Sure. Thanks, Brett, for the question. We can't help but be all smiles. It's a great question. We're feeling really good. I did announce to the Board of Trustees in the community that I'll be departing COTA. My last day is May 6th, officially. And just recently, the Board of Trustees, last week in a special meeting, met and they unanimously offered, and I believe she accepted.
I did.
Thumbs up. Okay. to Monica Tejas Fowler to be the next incoming president and CEO of COTA.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us anything about sort of the how that decision was made from your end?
Sure. Yeah. You know a lot about transit, and I do think there's kind of a following and an understanding in the community that things are changing. That includes our transit agency and mobility and how we move to support this growing economy. As part of COTA's growth, we have been really successful in recruiting talent, everyone from frontline operators to IT professionals. And Monica was one of those recruitments. Now, I hope she doesn't mind me admitting, it was a tough recruitment. We stole her away from another very successful transit agency on a different coast of the United States. She has a lot of experience, which she can tell you about, in other states, having built out major capital programs. So 2 years ago, when we really were looking for someone with an eye on operations, we had her in our sights. It took us almost a year to recruit her to the Columbus region. And thankfully, with Columbus, we have a great story to tell. And she bought into the vision of helping us get to next.
Mm-hmm. Before, and I do want to hear about your background, Monica. Joanna, can you tell us what you're going to be doing next? Or do you have those plans out? Are they made yet?
Well, you know, that's the question top of everyone's mind. My next is focusing on myself and figuring out how I want to invest my time, going through a lot of changes right now with sending my youngest away to college this fall. And I'm really having great conversations when you think about having worked in the automotive industry, transit, and tech. I'm exploring what might be next for me, but those plans are not set yet.
Mm-hmm. Monica, can you tell us about a little bit about that decision to come to Columbus and your background before you did? It was about a year ago that you came to COTA, is that right?
It's almost exactly a year ago, actually. I think I do have a history of large capital projects. So in Texas, I did a couple of rail projects in Denton County, a 21-mile rail project that connected downtown Denton to DART in Dallas. That's a lot of inter-community, inter-agency collaboration, so a very regional approach there.
That was also probably a very expensive project, right? What was the price tag on that?
Very expensive, but it was a little over half a billion.
Okay.
So Now, this is years back, so
you know, it would be more.
Fast forward, construction prices is probably close to $1 billion. And then shortly after that, so that was kind of an interesting place because it was really a smaller agency, and I got to do a lot of, you know, everything from strategy, the financial model, debt, to actually being out on platforms while we're installing ticket vending machines and understanding positive train control and all of those pieces. So that was really kind of fun and really kind of my big exposure to that large transit capital projects. I got recruited to go over to Fort Worth because they were in the process of trying to build a rail there, where they built, and we ended up being building a 27-mile rail project that went from a little past downtown Fort Worth into DFW Airport. Again, connects with Dart, connects with Denton. The regional connection is huge, and so really kind of understanding the customer aspect of that, and everything we did was kind of that approach of what does it look like for a customer, because they don't see boundaries and they don't need to, and so really kind of bringing that approach. So it was really kind of good. We did a first time debt issuance there, where we received a bond buyer's deal of the year award for that. We're recognized for that. That's in the financial world. That's a pretty big thing. But also, it really got a lot of accolades from FTA on that project in specific, and we had a lot of regional support. Based on that, I got recruited to go to Washington State, did some BRT projects there. Okay. And they actually had one built out. They did the groundbreaking for the second one in September, and they are under construction for their third line there. So that's in Vancouver, Washington. It's right across the river from Portland, mm-hmm. Oregon. So really kind of, again, taking that regional approach and the connectivity, we were actually we had service that went across the bridge into Portland, mm-hmm. And so as we were there, they started talking about replacing the Interstate Bridge project. So the transit agencies are really kind of big partners in that, because the bridge, the big push there is the bridge should not be built without a dedicated, some sort of dedicated guideway. Mm-hmm. And what would that look like? So whether it's light rail, whether it's BRT, and who would run it, and all of those different aspects. So I was a representative for that mega project. Mm-hmm. So it was the only project that I didn't see through till the end, and I was a little disappointed. But in talking with Joanna and Emil, who is my predecessor, really kind of got excited about the things that are going on here in Columbus and the opportunity that's in front of us, right? And so, you know, made the trip out here. And once I was here and I recognized the community, I saw all the possibilities. I think that's when I was kind of bought in, mm-hmm. aside from just Joanna in general. She knows how I feel about her.
We did a pretty hard sales job. It was, but it was easy, wasn't it? The restaurants and the lifestyle. It just, maybe we're, I hear the term a lot that we're an undiscovered gem, and I don't think that's the case anymore. But once you actually get your feet on the ground in this city, mm-hmm. in this community, mm-hmm. it kind of sells itself.
It's a beautiful community. Yeah. I mean, especially coming from the West Coast, for me, like, we were walking out to lunch one day, and I was like, I just love the sidewalks, and they're so clean, and they're so open. You know, like, you can just walk on a sidewalk. And coming from the West Coast, you know, that's kind of like, that's not really a thing there all the time. So, have really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I think once I've came here and visited here, it wasn't that much harder to get me to say, yeah, I want to mm-hmm. be part of this.
And in terms of the work of what CODA has been doing, like, for the past year and this coming year, I mean, I've been writing about this stuff for over a decade, and this strikes me as maybe the most important year for CODA in that time. There's just a lot happening. There's a lot of big projects. What's your vision for CODA this next year and for the future? Where do you see it heading?
That's, I mean, such a great question, but I would say that I don't really have to come in with a whole new vision because the vision's already there. It's really just more about implementing it. And that's the great thing about it is there's kind of this long laid out plan. I think maybe we get in 5-6 years and maybe we're starting to think about, okay, well, what are we talking about? If we are able to get the density that we need, if we are able to see some of the development go in, you know, is that when we start talking about, like, are there other alternatives we need to start evaluating? But for now, I think we need to just build out what we have planned. That vision is laid out there. Mm-hmm. And that's really the path we need to do because I think we need to introduce the region to what the possibilities mm-hmm. are. And once they start, like, embracing that and we see that, then we can then say, okay, now we can make we can dream bigger here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well
and
said.
We can do bigger things.
Well said.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've mentioned it by name, but Link Us is the name of sort of that big vision. And the plan is to go to voters in November for a sales tax increase. And a lot of that vision involves building out bus rapid transit, BRT corridors. There's also improvements to existing service and bike and pedestrian improvements, all of that that we've been covering. One of the comments, I know you all have seen this, that we get, and you mentioned rail already, but there's a whole subset of people who when they hear you talk about BRT, all they can think is, it's not rail. That's not exciting. When are we going to get rail in Columbus? So I don't know if... both of you want to touch on that?
I think we can both touch on it. Yeah. You know, I was here during the 1999 initiative. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is how much things have changed in that 25-year time span, especially the fact that BRT and dedicated transit, rapid transit, has accelerated across the nation. It's actually a preferred alternative. You see a lot of communities who are choosing to do BRT instead of rail because it gets you the same headways, the same timing, and it's done at a fraction of the cost. And so Columbus's big idea and the region's big idea is how do we connect as many communities and create as much opportunity so you can build 4 or 5 different corridors, which is what the current plan is. Mm-hmm. Now, that does not rule out that maybe one of those corridors, if necessary, depending on the engineering stuff I'm not going to get into today, you know, might be rail, but we can see the same performance out of rapid transit. It's also what the federal government is funding, and the entire Link Us model is really based upon us bringing home almost $1 billion from the federal government by leveraging our local sales tax. So that half a penny that voters get to decide on in November could leverage so much money from the feds where they're investing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly it, right? And which is why I kind of talked about, it's like we have to introduce this concept of this regional transit to the community first, and they have to embrace it. And that means density, built-in density, the economic development that typically goes around, that you see around these types of projects. Once that happens, once they understand it, we may become more competitive so that we can leverage our funding so that we can receive federal funding to help build out some, you know, whether it's light rail or whatever in the case. I think you have to choose what's right for the community. And what I'll say is, you know, BRT, bus rapid transit is, it's fast, it's efficient, and it's a sixth of the cost of light rail. Right. So it's affordable, and it makes it the right choice for us right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we're, you know, that's going to be it forever, but it is the right choice now.
Right. And one of the things I know people have talked about with the Link Us plan is that it's not a single line, where everybody else kind of misses out. It's kind of lines all over the region. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah. That's I do like that you're tiptoeing into a really important conversation. So I'm going to run with that if you'll let me.
Sure.
The reality is we have 5 corridors planned. And then sometimes the question is, what if I'm not on a corridor? And the reality is it also includes that funding would cover a 45% increase in our existing local bus network. That's significant. That mm-hmm. is huge.
What? And I was going to ask about that because, you know, I'm a regular bus rider. So that's, and I know a lot of people, when they hear about these big plans, they're like, well, I ride the bus every day. How is this going to help me?
That's right.
And if I'm not on one of those corridors. So what does that, I mean, I've heard people talk about potentially 24-hour service. Is that...
So that 45% increase, that's like a financial number. Mm-hmm. The beautiful thing about Linkos is it's really community-based. As you've been covering it for the last few years, the feedback from the neighborhoods, from employers to say, this is the type of service we need. So you can add those hours maybe at the end of shift, you know, like mm-hmm. later nights, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. Maybe it's 24 hours in certain neighborhoods. In addition to the additional bus service, you mentioned sidewalks, bikeways, road improvements. This is the first time ever in the state's history that we would also be building supportive infrastructure. So mm-hmm. when you get off of transit, you need a sidewalk, you need a streetlight, you need a safe place to land to finish your journey. And all of that is part of the program to build out connections between communities. Mm-hmm. So you may not have a corridor coming through your community. You might be surprised at the bikeway or the sidewalk that gets built in your community to connect you to transit very easily. Mm-hmm.
I'll add the Coda Plus zones, because that will be something that we can launch pretty quickly. And we have communities right now that maybe it's going to take a while to get those sidewalks done. Maybe it's going to take a while, but we need to connect them to a larger system. That Coda Plus zones allows us to do that, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, unsafe because of sidewalks or lighting, or there's just not close to any lines, right? We can accomplish that with those Coda Plus zones.
And that, just in case people don't know what Coda Plus is, that's
our on-demand yeah. service. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you call up and a van will come right to you, basically.
You can call up. We also have an app. So mm-hmm. like I just keep want to say microtransit, so Uber, Lyft, think it works very similar to that. Mm-hmm. And it's just quick, but it also has some mobility options so that people with challenges can also use the service.
Yeah, I want to point out that the two largest growing groups of people in our community, so the aging community and the younger community, so under 20, they are the two biggest users of Coda Plus. They are driving demand. It has increased more than, like, I think it's like 2 or 3,000%. I know this is recorded. Don't quote me on that. since we launched it with our partner Grove City in 2019, and then since then, Westerville, the entire city of Westerville, you can ride Coda Plus. And it's been amazing to see how people who maybe don't own a second car in the family, or they don't drive anymore, or they're not driving yet, mm-hmm. Are using it for point-to-point trips. Like, hey, I need to do a grocery trip, or I need to go to the doctor, or I'm going to take it to get to a fixed route transit line. Mm-hmm. It has surprised us. We modeled our microtransit off of what had been done by Chicago and LA in the kind of 2015, 2018 era. And it's really been a model that transit agencies across the nation have replicated. So Linkos includes funding to expand that to other neighborhoods. We have a lot of neighborhoods and cities who want it today. Mm-hmm. So working on it. So after that November vote, Coda Plus will be a really quick reality.
Mm-hmm. Great. I wanted to ask about another potential big project, which I haven't heard as much about recently, which is the former Greyhound station downtown, which Coda owns. I'm trying to remember the timeline. Coda bought it in 2021. Greyhound for a while was operating downtown out of the Coda bus terminal at the Columbus Commons parking garage.
That's
and
right.
Then now they've since moved way out to the west side, and there's been all kinds of issues with that move. But the whole time Coda has held on to this piece of what's really, I mean, I also write about development, so mm-hmm. that's a very prime piece of real estate right in the middle of downtown.
That's right.
What can you tell me about Coda's plans for that piece of real estate?
Well, I can talk about the genesis and then pass it over to you sure. if you'd like, but that was really an important part of our board's vision for what the future looks like. So knowing that real estate had issues for decades in the past. It was very successful for us at the time to bring Greyhound into our site, the bus terminal, and let them run operations there. So securing that site for future development, this is where I really like to talk to the community about Coda as a tool, right? We should be supporting your goals and your economic development, your social structures. I think we all know that the rate Columbus is growing, something needs built on that site. Mm-hmm. So we have undertaken a federal process. We are regulated by FTA and the DOT to make sure the site is clean and that it's safe. It's kind of a long, drawn-up process. I might say a little bureaucratic.
Clean in terms of like not polluted or that kind
polluted,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And double-checking for historical value of anything that was previously on the site. When we get through that process, we really, really would like to partner with the development community to see what is feasible. You know, what type of mixed-use development should be on that site. So again, we own the land, but we see the development community coming in and really building that out in the future.
Yeah, and I think, so one of the studies that's being done right now is the downtown convergence plan, right? Mm. So they're really kind of trying to analyze, you know, where are the best places for there to be kind of that transit hub, so to speak? Will it continue to be that location? You know, there's also discussion about bringing passenger rail to the region. And, you know, obviously we're going to have to connect to that. We want to be huge partners with that. So, you know, are there two different large hubs somewhere downtown connecting? That's certainly one of the main ones. And East Main is kind of always on discussion. But I think that those plans have to kind of play out and there has to be some decisions made. That's not a CODA only decision. Mm-hmm. Obviously, City of Columbus is a huge partner in making that decision. But that will kind of guide us in what we put there. Mm-hmm. But the discussion with developers is ongoing. Okay. And it's certainly something that I think we're trying to keep interest in and ensuring that when it is built out, it's built out in a big positive way.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me any kind of timeline for when like the studying is going to be wrapping up or when we could see something come together for that site?
Yeah, that's wrapping up soon. And I think that decision, I mean, we're really looking for that decision to be made here in the latter part of this month or early April. So I'm hoping that we have some decisions to bring to our board by this summer.
That decision, for clarification, being the feds kind of clearing us to move forward.
Yeah. Okay.
In the development community has been wonderful. They've been incredibly patient because we can't, you know, have a predetermined conclusion there. We have to let some of the studies take place. So getting that feedback, like in the next month or so, allows us to then officially begin conversations with the development community. I think when you look at what that was formerly known as the CDDC, I think it's Downtown Columbus Incorporated
very
now.
Very recently, yes.
What they're looking at with the number of residential units they'd like to see downtown, more walkable and connected communities, you can expect that they would be participating in that. Mm-hmm. But there's no official plans right now. Just want to be really clear in case any of the feds are listening.
Okay? Right. I'm sure there's been interest, though. You keep mentioning the development community. I'm sure there's interest in that site.
Yeah, they've been great about it.
Yeah. I wanted to ask really quick, because in the last couple of years, there's been kind of a struggle, and I know it's not just at CODA, but to hire enough operators to ramp up the service the way that you wanted to. Where do you stand with that, and what's outlook like for even this year? I know there may be some service changes coming, and how is the hiring going? And I know also, sorry, this is a multi-part question. Monica, you also were involved in the talks with the union about the latest contract, which was just signed. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and where we stand in terms of the workforce and getting people to work at CODA?
Sure.
Yeah, so, well, the contract was, I think, from my perspective, very positive. I mean, one, we got a contract for 3 years, right? That's a great win. But I think even more so is I think Joanna and I really came in with ideas about what we wanted to see in that, and that was for us demonstrating to the employees how we recognize what they bring to the table and the vital role that they play within CODA and in the community in general. So it really wasn't about us going in and getting a win other than making sure that they understood that we truly value the efforts that they put forth every day, right? Mm-hmm. So we were able to do that, you know, with wages and benefits, but also in just bringing them to the table more. So one of the things that I think that may be overlooked, but is very important, is we really set up multiple committees internally to say these are work groups that we're going to have internally that will not just be CODA administrative staff, but it will also be TW representation. Mm-hmm. And the rationale behind that is we want to make sure that as we're having these discussions and we're making decisions, that there's really a partnership there, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really something that I would say is a win. I also think that there are some benefits to that contract that will continue to not just retain the employees we have, but attract employees. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think at sure. some point, this is going to be really one of the more attractive places to work in the region.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Even when you think about the fact we're the last, like, what was it? Industrialized country that doesn't have support for families. So we got out ahead of that even before the contract with the 12 weeks paid family leave for birthing parents and 6 weeks for all other parents. We have employees taking advantage of that. I think there's a recognition. You started the question with the workforce shortage. This mm-hmm. is not unique to CODA. It's not unique to transit. This is a reality that our nation faces. So looking at what really is important to people who want to maybe work a couple years or 5 years or 10 or 30, you're welcome to stay for 30, but adapting our business practices to accommodate the new lifestyles. A lot of that's written into that contract that Monica helped orchestrate, and that's a first for us. And I'd like to think of things as a win moving forward only when everybody's like, okay, there's something in here for me. Mm-hmm. It's not a management win. I don't believe in that type of mentality. It's what works well for people. So I think it's a beginning. It's not the end, but mm-hmm. it's a really good start. And the reality is we all are going to have to figure out how to be more efficient at work when there's a workforce shortage that doesn't have a foreseeable end.
Right. And in terms of the coming year and the possibility of getting, you know, hiring on more operators and adding back service.
That's been going great. Yeah, so okay. Our last two same day hiring events that we had last year, incredible success. We're having another one here in just a few days. I think it's April 24th.
Yes.
So come on out, April 24th. From what I understand, it's a lot of fun.
It is.
We have a food truck.
Yeah. Yeah. We and I think the first one was very successful, but as successful as that one was, the second one just even like bigger. It was even better because there was some lessons learned. They were able to streamline a lot of things. And I think people came out and I mean, just an incredible group of people who were really passionate about transit and mobility in general. So we were really excited. I mean, I got to go out and spend a couple of hours out there and do some interviews myself. And it's just really a good time. And really kind of we have representation, we have operators there, we have some vehicle maintenance technicians that come out, we have people from an administrative staff, and of course HR is there to keep us in check. but I think from the community perspective, we really are getting a lot of interest mm-hmm. in finding a place here at CODA for them.
And I think that's part of a broader conversation. You and I have known each other for years now, and I'm really passionate about people getting into STEM and the trades. So that's a broader conversation happening right now in Ohio, Central Ohio. There's a lot of job opportunities. Maybe you don't grow up thinking, oh, I want to be in transportation. Mm-hmm. There is so much going on here, from IT to vehicle maintenance techs to electrification. Like, we need people who can understand how to help us adapt to hydrogen fuel cell. Our operators are not only frontline service employees, they are operators driving $1 million computer on wheels, mm-hmm. right? So it's an exciting career field to look into, and I think we're finally getting people to understand there's a lot of different opportunities here.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. We're running out of time, so I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you wanted to add? Is there anything we missed? I always, when I'm talking to people for stories, I always say that at the end because I sometimes get some of the best stuff that way. But is there anything that we missed that you wanted to add before we go?
I would like to point out, this is our 50th anniversary. Not a lot of organizations make it to 50.
We are here for the community, and I think you know, all of our pins say something like "Rolling since 1974," mm-hmm. and if the community wants us to, we're going to keep rolling for another 50.
Great, thank you so much.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Confluence Cast presented by Columbus Underground. Again, you can get more information on what we discussed today in the show notes for this episode at theconfluencecast.com. Please rate, subscribe, share this episode of the Confluence Cast with your friends, family, contacts, enemies, your favorite transit specialist. If you're interested in sponsoring the Confluence Cast, get in touch with us. We can be reached by email at info@theconfluencecast.com. Our theme music was composed by Benji Robinson. Our producer is Philip Cogley. I'm your host, Tim Fulton. Have a great week.